It is my greatest pleasure to introduce Reverend Fagy Torsby.
Thank you very much, Fabi. Maybe it's Reverend. Our subject this evening is Reclaiming the Throne, the challenges that contemporary firm women face today. I really wanted to change that to Reclaiming the Crown. And as I share a vart with you, I will explain to you why. We all know in Lachadodi, we say, Bo'i b'shalom ateres ba'ala, that a woman is the crown of her husband. And this, I want to kind of speak about this inyan a little bit, about the woman being the crown. This is variously throughout Machshavas Yisrael, the woman is referred to as the crown. Now, interestingly, a little background for this, what I would like to share with you is, you remember, some of you have our teachers here, and those of you who have had the privilege of teaching Nevi'im, as I've had, I've taught the Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Beis, Malachim, and when we prepare to teach, we get very, I know for myself, I got very attached to some of the figures in our Jewish history. And one that really touched me, more even than many others, was Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech, to me, was, I don't know, it just sometimes when I read through everything that he went through and the trials and tribulations and how close he came to actually being there and didn't quite make it, to me he's one of the most tragic figures, and there were lots of the dynamics there that I related to. In any case, Shaul HaMelech, the greatness, we're told, his greatness, the nekuda of his greatness, was his tremendous humility, his tremendous anivus. He was nechba al hakelim. When they tried to find him, they wanted to honor him, they couldn't find him. He was there with all the, with the baggage, with the luggage, with whatever. He wasn't among the people who wasn't ready for the honor and the kuvvet they wanted to accord him. So Chazal asked the question, why was David HaMelech, who followed him, we know that the Melucha was taken away from Shaul HaMelech for a whole variety of reasons, and they asked the question, why was David Matzliach and Shaul was not Matzliach? And they say that the reason, when this is really the Shemesh Shmuel says, and he gives a whole elaborate discussion there that I'm not going to go into, but basically what he says is that Shaul HaMelech had this quality of anivus, he was nechba like Kalim, but what he was missing, that David HaMelech had to bring to the scene, had to bring to Malchus Yisrael, was a gaiva shel kedusha. And where David got that from was from Moab, from Rus. And he was able to take that nekuda, that mida that in Moab wasn't something that was b'kedusha, but it was transferred over by Rus and brought into Klal Yisrael. It became a gaiva shel kedusha, that this was necessary in order to have a Malchus Yisrael, in order for there to be a melucha that's lasting, that's enduring, that it was requisite to have not only the anivus of a Shaul, which is definitely the beginning point, this being nechba like Kalim, but in addition to that, you had to have this gava shel kedusha that Rus brought to the Malchus Yisrael in the person of David HaMelech. And without that, there couldn't be a Malchus Yisrael. That's why David was matzliach. He brought that second dimension that was requisite for in order that there should be a Malchus that can have a kiyum. Now, in contrast to that, so here we understand that there has to be a certain, when we talk about Malchus, when we talk about a crown, when we talk about a melucha, what's requisite is a certain gaiva shebikdusha. There has to be a certain pride in that melucha. In contrast to that, the Gemara tells us something very interesting. The Gemara tells us a definition for chutzpah. The Gemara says the definition for chutzpah is Malchus below toga. It's Malchus without a crown. Toga is a crown. It's somebody who assumes to reign, who assumes to be in control, but he has no crown. There's no legitimacy for it. Now, let's talk a little bit, what is the significance of having this toga, of having this atara, of having this crown, as it relates to us, because here we are, ateres bala, we're the crown. Really what it means is when we have a crown, it means that what a crown signifies is that we have a domain. A crown means that we have a territory, we have a parameter over which we reign. In having this crown, what we need to bring to this parameter, to this domain, is a certain seder, a certain shalom, a certain shleimus, a certain achdus, a certain kavod. That's what the person who's wearing this hatorah, who's wearing this crown, brings to their domain. What it also speaks to is that this person who's wearing this hatorah, who's wearing this crown, a crown sits above the head, on top of the head, meaning that that domain over which one reigns transcends the individual. It's something that goes above and beyond the concerns, the limited and confined concerns of that individual, and goes beyond them to the entirety of the melucha, to the entirety of the domain. The concern of the person who wears that Torah is not one only of themselves, but goes and transcends beyond themselves. Now, in contrast to that, we can understand why it is that the definition that the Gemara gives is that chutzpah is malchus below taga. Because what does that mean? Here it's a person who wants power, but he wants that he has no domain. It all begins and ends with himself. This is a person who has no consideration, has no crown that sits on top of his head, that signifies that there's something of concern to him that goes above and beyond their own person. So all that this person is interested in, and that's why it's considered chutzpah, what they're interested in is power for themselves. They're interested in, and we see this oftentimes in relationships. If you have a relationship between a husband and wife, where there isn't this atara, where there isn't this transcendent view, then what happens, and we only have this chutzpah aspect, then we have the chutzpah definition, where it's looking for malchus without the taga, and what you have is competitiveness between a husband and wife. You have each one looking to win, each one looking for power, each one looking for control. And this is what we have in the world out there today. You have, we're told, women are encouraged today, you know what, you gotta get some of this aggressiveness, assertiveness training. You gotta become a little bit, you know, get a little bit of this chutzpah. You know this chutzpah. This chutzpah is power without the crown. It's power without the crown because the crown signifies something other than my soul, going beyond myself. And when there isn't that domain, there isn't that understanding, that's a Yiddish understanding of what Ateres Bala means, then what we have here is a situation where each one is vying for control, and each one is vying for control for themselves, not for anything that goes above and beyond themselves. They're not considered, they don't feel themselves responsible to anybody else, they're not concerned with those who are dependent upon themselves. Now what do we, as women, Baruch Hashem, members of Klal Yisrael, who are looking to have this Torah, Taras Bala, what do we do? What do we function? How do we function in that role? And how do we see this Torah, the function of this Torah? Now, the function of the Torah is to empower. It's Taras Bala. The husband, as we all know, Rambam says, our husband's supposed to be king, right? We are the crown upon the head of the king. What does the crown do? The crown empowers the king to be what he is. It makes it possible for him to be what he needs to be. It enables him, through the medium of love and respect, of seichel. Seichel is a very, on top of the list, of seichel. Seichel with love and respect, with appreciation, with hakaras hatov, and another very, very important dimension, with simcha, joy, bringing joy to the whole, to the domain, to the parameters that we find ourselves having this atara, creating this ataras bala, and the sense of privilege for that which we are all about. So we are the ones that enable, that make it possible for the king to be a king. We're the ones, we're the crown. We're the ones that make it possible for him to be a king, and we're the ones that make it possible for those who grow up within our domain to be the princes and the princesses. Not Jewish American princesses, not the Japs, but Yiddish princes and Yiddish princesses. We're the ones that energize everybody within our domain. And we know, as the Gemara tells us, Hakol min ha'isha. Hakol min ha'isha. And there's absolutely no question about it. The Gemara gives its own instances, but any of you who've counseled, who've talked to enough people, know that where it all flows from is the woman. Whatever environment, whatever atmosphere, whatever kind of flavor you're going to find in the home is going to be entirely the mood that is set by the woman, the tone that is set by the woman, the chinuch of the home. Everything is totally dependent on the woman. The one who motivates, who makes, who gives chiyus, who gives a desire and a cheshik for the household to go in a certain direction. That's why the Gemara says, Nashim b'may zachyan. What do women, how do we get an equal share? We're told we get an equal share in Olam Haba, even though men are the ones who learn Torah, and certainly Torah, Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam, and we get an equal share. By why? For what reason? Because we're the ones that wait up for our husbands to come home from Shiurim at night, and we're the ones that take the children to Chadarim. And when you say it, it sounds like, you know, especially given our society and the kind of things we're brainwashed with, it sounds like, come on, like, you know, be serious. They sit in the study halls, they sit in the Beit HaMedrash, and they learn Torah morning and night, and because I'm going to carpool, and I'm going to take my children to cheder, I'm going to wait up at night for them to come home, I'm going to get an equal share in Olam Haba. You know, like they're trying to, what are they trying to pull one over on me? I mean, I'm too smart for that. But really, if you think about it, there's no question that we're entitled to an equal share, because it's very, very pashut. If we're not there at the conclusion of a hard day, whatever it is that our husbands happen to be doing, and after that long, hard day, our husbands go to Beis HaMedrash to take in a dafyomi or a shir or whatever, and if we wait up for them, and we stand by the door, and our greeting, whether it's verbal, nonverbal, or however we want to express it, says to our husbands, I'm so proud of you. You, after all, everything you've gone through today, you, it's a value by you. You've made it your business to go there and sit and learn yet, after a long, hard day. There's no question that that's the motivation that every man needs in order to do it. And if a husband doesn't get that motivation, if our children don't get that motivation, if we don't take the time out and say to our children, we drop everything, on, you have an opportunity for another shir, you have an opportunity to learn a little bit more. Sure, I'm very busy, but I'll drop everything. If we don't do that, it doesn't get done. It won't happen. So it's for good reason that we get an equal share, because everything that we're all about, we're the enablers, we're the motivators, we're the ones that empower everybody around us to be what they need to be. And we're the ones that identify the home as Malchus. Now let me just tell you, when I talk about Seichel, and this is really kind of kind of a lighter, on the lighter side, just in terms of using a little bit Seichel, there's one psychiatrist who said that, yeah, we have an opportunity in just small ways to shape the behavior of those around us when we say that we enable. Shaping the behavior, he says, accentuate the positive. Set the stage for a win-win scenario by praising a person's strengths, especially a strength he might take for granted. And then he said something very, very interesting. We all know we should praise, but here he says something that I think is noteworthy. He says, be specific, he says. Don't say to somebody, to the other person that's very important in our life, you're so terrific, you're so wonderful. That's not as effective as saying, I admire the skillful way that you just handled such and such, that you just did. I admire the wonderful way you just handled your little sister. That was beautiful, the way you did that. not just saying an overall broad sweeping general statement like, oh, you're so terrific, you're so wonderful, but being more specific. That was wonderful. The way you handled that was really terrific. Saying to our husband, you know, the way you handled our son this time, that was really, I really admire you for being able to keep your cool and to do that at the same, exactly what was necessary. To being specific makes such a difference. And then he says another thing, shaping behavior. He says, get people to rise to your expectations. He says he cites a woman whose husband was very pressured at work and took it out on her verbally every evening. She was almost ready to call the marriage quits when she decided to try this strategy. When her husband came home angry, she would say in a calm but confident tone, that's not like you. You're not the kind of husband who takes out his frustrations on the people who love him. And she repeated this every night until after several days, he threw his arms up in acceptance and said, I know, that's not like me. Now, I'm not going to do this anymore to you. This kind of shaping may seem slightly dishonest, but in reality, says this psychiatrist, you're just giving people access to a better part of themselves. You were just giving people access to a better part of themselves. It's not being dishonest. It's not that if we wouldn't dig inside of ourselves or help those that we're trying to enable, that if they find, they can find the better part of themselves, and everybody wants to find the better part of themselves. I remember hearing once when they asked the question that by us, you know, that if a person doesn't want to give a get, when a get is in order, you know that when we used to have our own Batei Din and we lived in Eretz Yisrael and in our own society, they used to take this person and find a dark alley someplace and do a little friendly persuasion on him. You know, beat him up until he said, I want to, because it has to be of his own free will. So he has to say, Achvil, Achvil, Achvil. So everybody asked the question, what kind of Achvil is that? If you're beating him, does he have any choice? And they say in Rambam, I think is the one that says it, that what you're really doing is exactly what this the psychiatrist says. You're giving him access to the better part of himself. Because deep down, every Yid wants to do what's right. And you're just helping him find that something that's buried deep down inside of himself by a few lashes. So it's as enablers, we're able to do this for for those who are dependent on us. We're able to help them find the better part of themselves. And thereby, we know that it's Chachamos Noshim Bansa Besa. Through this, through the Kayat that the Rabbeinu Shalom invested within us, that he entrusted us with this Atara. He entrusted us with this crown. And this crown we've used throughout the ages. This is something that we took pride in throughout all the doidas in the past. We know that through the most horrific of times, the most horrible of times, throughout the ages when we had persecution coming at us from all directions, we're outside our, we were discriminated against, we were pogroms and holocausts and so forth. Whatever we experienced on the outside, the men went out there and had a hustle in that kind of unfriendly and alien environment. Still they came home, the home was a palace. They walked in through that door, and there was the Ataras Bala, there was the woman, the crown, who kept the environment intact. It was warm, it was peaceful, there was a bottom gate, there were values, there was integrity, there were ethics, there was everything. The home fires were kept burning by the woman who carried this crown upon her head and who made it possible for us to make it through all those horrible, horrible times and to find ourselves this evening here in the yeshiva of Spring Valley. We were always able to create, with that crown, we created a citadel, we created an oasis, we created an escape from the horrors of the world. And this was always entrusted to us the women. We were the ones that were given that crown. We were the ones that were the enablers. We were the ones that created that kind of environment. So our task it is to try to find this delicate balance. In creating this malchus, there's the delicate balance that we need to find where it's levulti rum levavo meyachav. A king has to keep the soul aspect of humility, of anivus. His heart shouldn't raise itself above that of his brothers. And at the same time, we also need that what David HaMelech through Rus brought to Malchus, which is this gaiva shebikdusha. We need to walk straight. We need to know that we need to be proud about this crown that we carry on our heads that was entrusted to each and every one of us. And that's why our Chachamim tell us that for a man to be without this crown, for a man who doesn't have a wife, we're told he's shorui below, hashorui below isha is shorui below Torah, shorui below bracha, below simcha, below tova. Doesn't have any of these wonderful things that the crown brings to it. And we are that crown. Now the question is, if this is the case, and we have this wonderful crown, what has happened to the pride? What has happened to this gava shebikdusha? Why aren't we dancing on the rooftops? That Baruch Hashem, Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu, how fortunate are we that we're the ones that are this Ateres Bala? Why aren't we thrilled beyond expression? And here I think part of the reason is something that we learned the last week's Sedra. Last week's Sedra, you remember, was Parshas Vayigash, and it's a Parsha, Parshas Vayechi, and it's Parshas Stuma. And Rashi asks, Lama Parsha Zustuma, why is this a closed Parsha? Usually between Parshiot and Parshiot in the Torah, you have some spaces, I think 9 spaces, right? This time there's only one space between the two, Vayigash and Vayechi. And Rashi explains, Lefi, that Shekevan Sheniftar Yaakov Avinu Nistamu Einehem Shel Yisrael. Avram Avinu was Niftar, and after Yaakov Avinu was Niftar, Nistamu Einehem, the eyes of Klal Yisrael became closed. Mitzoras HaShibud, because the Shibud, the Golus began. The hard work, the Tzoras of the Golus began. So all the Chachamim asked the obvious question. We know that the Golus didn't begin, the enslavement, slavery didn't begin until all the Shvatim died. And here it's only Yaakov Avinu who died, so what kind of Golus began? So they said that what happened is it was a Golus Ruchni, a Shibud Ruchni that began. That their eyes did not see clearly any longer. Once Yaakov Avinu was Nifter, something changed. What changed? And they tell us that what changed was what we came in contact with earlier, what we were exposed to earlier. When you remember the Masa of Yosef, when the wife of Potiphar tried to attract him and tempt him, you remember? So the last moment she did this over and over again until they found themselves one day alone, and he was right on the brink. He was right on the edge. And just then, as he was about to succumb, what appeared to him was the musti yukno shel aviv, the image, the saintly image of his father Yaakov appeared before his eyes. And he gave a look at that face of his father, the heilige punim of his father Yaakov, and he couldn't do it. The expectations that this father who loved him so much, who learned with him, he couldn't disappoint the expectations that his father Yaakov had of him. And he was able to pull himself out of that jacket and run out of the house. He had that demus diyakno. What happened here, when Yaakov Avinu was nifter, the next generation didn't have access to that clear demus diyakno shel Yaakov Avinu. That image of Yaakov Avinu began to fade. They didn't have such a clear sense of what was right and what was wrong. Their patriarch, the patriarch was gone. And this is a little bit of what's we don't have our heroes. The heroes, those beautiful, wonderful faces of days bygone, the faces, the heilige faces of, in some cases, mothers and grandmothers, and the alter shtetlach, yidinus, those wonderful mamaluch from olden times, sefeltins a little bit, that that the Musti Yokno, that image that kept us going, the image where we lived in a consolidated society, where every step along the way we interacted with these beautiful saintly figures, where they gave us chizuk and they gave us encouragement, and their life, they were living examples, they were living lessons. We didn't have to go to sperm, we didn't have to go to books to learn lessons. We just looked at them, and they in themselves were a lesson of everything that we had to know. And now there's, Baruch Hashem, not to say Chas V'Shalom that we don't have, but it's not the same like we once had when we lived in that kind of society where wherever we went, everybody had access to that kind of the Musti Yokno of models and of heroes, of somebody who set those kind of examples and made that which we need to do very clear and unobstructed for us. Today we don't live in Yaakov Avinu's compound, unfortunately. And as a result of that, what we get today are mixed messages. There are messages that we get here of one kind, and then the whole world filters in. There's no way that we can keep that world outside, out of our lives. So we get messages coming from one side, and we have other messages coming from the other side. And they're mixed messages, and they're confusing messages. Part of us pulls us in one direction, and part of us pulls us in the other direction. And the sacredness of the crown of this Hatteras that is our legacy is becomes blurred. And now the question becomes, what happens, of course, when all of this becomes blurred? We get caught a little bit in that mixed message that what the other side is trying to tell us, and those things are very compelling. That Yetzer Hara that comes at us is very, very smart and hits us where we live. And that's the toga below Malchus. That's the crown without a Malchus. And that's what creates havoc with our lives. That's what creates chaos and destruction. That's the one that wants to tell us, you know what, we can have power and we don't have to have responsibility. We can concentrate on ourselves. We look out there and there's the state of mothers. The role of mothers, the role of wives is devalued. It's not appreciated in the world out there. And as much as we like to think we live in our own world, all of that seeps in. There isn't that much. If somebody says to you, now what do you do? And in some instances, I don't know how many of you are exposed to that, and you say, oh, I'm a mother, and I stay home and I take care of my children. I don't do this and I don't do that. I stay home. It's a full-time job. You don't get quite the respect or the respectful look that when you say to somebody, oh, I'm going out and I'm a shtickle knacker, a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, I can manage a gun to office, and I can manage, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm an executive, I'm a computer expert, I'm a whatever it is, fill in the missing blank, whatever it is, and there's a little bit of glint in the eye of the person you're talking to that says, uh-huh. A little seichel I see here, you know, maybe above and beyond the ordinary. And this, as much as it's very subtle, and certainly in our circles, Baruch Hashem, less so than in other circles, but vinisht, we're exposed to it. It's the devalued state of mothers and wives that's in our world today. And then, of course, the looking out for number one. Look out for number one. After all, myself, and I, I'm the axis around which the entire world revolves. You know, that's what the world out there tells me. Self-fulfillment. You need to do something with your life that will be self-fulfilling and self-gratifying, self-gratification. And not only self-gratification, and all of us could answer very truthfully, and we'll get to that, there's no greater gratification than in the thing, Baruch Hashem, that the Torah would have us do. Wearing that crown, Ateras Bala, is the greatest gratification. But here they look for instant gratification. The gratification that the Torah way brings us is certainly the only thing that's there and that's meaningful and that is enduring. But meantime, I want something now, right now. My husband, just recently, somebody told me they heard him say this, and it was really such an interesting chap. I didn't hear it directly from him, but he was speaking to a bar mitzvah bocher, and he said to him, he said, you know, this is the era of instant gratification. We don't want to, in order to have postponed gratification, you have to put in a lot of harivanya. You want to be a shtickle abentoida. You have to plug away. You have to sit long hours until you see some results. You want to raise a household of children that are b'nei toida, that are b'nos toira. You have to put in a lot of hard work till you see a little bit nachas, till the returns begin coming in. But we want the instant gratification. So he said to the audience there, he said, give a look, why don't you take a look at your watches? The watches you're wearing, he said. I would venture to say that most of you have watches that have digital readouts. No digital readouts. It says that now it'll have 9:24, whatever. It doesn't have, it doesn't make you go through all that work, have a whole face on the watch where you have the hours that passed and the hours that are coming, and you have to sit and take an extra second to figure out exactly what time it is. It reads out exactly what you have to know. Right now, this minute, it's 9:24, and I don't have to worry about when it was 9:23, and I don't have to worry about 9:25 coming up. All I need is right now, I don't have to worry about when it was 9:23, and I don't have to worry about 9:25 coming up. All I need is right now, it's 9:24, and that's all. That's my sense of responsibility, is only for this minute now. I instant gratification, whatever makes me happy right now. I owe nothing to my past, and I owe nothing to my future. All I need to know is right this minute, whatever makes me happy this minute, this is what I want. That's a description, unfortunately, of what's going on out there in our generation today. It's instant gratification. Nobody wants to put in the hard work that comes in that ultimate, real, and enduring gratification. We want the instant stuff. So as a result of that, the question becomes, why then put it forth, all this miseras nefesh? Why go through all the trials and tribulations in life? Why beat our brains out? If there's somebody who's offering us instant gratification. And here I want to share with you a wonderful word that I heard this past Klatik Tznacht from Arosh Kogel in Milwaukee. It wasn't his own, he brought it in the name of somebody, I don't know who, but anyways, it says in this Taka last week's Sedrin, Yisachar, Vayar Menucha Kitov, Ve'esa'orat Kine'ima Ve'yet Shichmol Desbo. So Yisachar, who was the tribe, the Shevet of Torah, saw Menucha, and he saw that it was good, and the land that it was pleasant, and then he bent his shoulder to suffer, to tolerate, to suffer. So he said that the Mefarshim asked the question, he sees Vayar Menucha, he saw Menucha, and he saw, and Menucha is something wonderful, something, and he saw the land that it was good. We're talking about all pleasant things. So then he bends, what does he have to suffer about? Here he's talking about Menucha, he's talking about good things. What does he need to suffer? So he said that the Chafetz Chaim brings a wonderful mashal. The Chafetz Chaim brings a mashal of a person who was a diamond soicher. He was a merchant of diamonds. And he went to, once a year he would go to this fair, and he would take enough money to buy a whole lot of merchandise, and then he would take enough money to make his trip there and his trip back, and that would be his trip annually. Every year he used to make this trip. So he gets ready, takes 10,000 ruble, he's going to buy 10,000 ruble worth of schoida, and he takes 500 ruble for travel expenses, 250 to get there, 250 to get home. And sure, he's on his way, and he goes in a bekuvedika way, beautiful looking chariot, and first class in every which way, the best places to stay, and so forth. And he gets to this yarid, to wherever it is that they used to do this business, and he meets his people, the usual people, and he buys his 10,000 ruble worth of tzchayda, and he's on his way home. And he's on his way home in one of these inns that he stayed. Somebody comes over to him and says to him, I have the buy of the century for you. I have such a metziah for you that you have never in your life seen such a metziah. He says, it just so happens that I'm up against hard times and I have to sell this for the ridiculous amount that I'm selling it for, but never in your life will you come across such a material. He says to him, listen, I'm sorry, I wish I had met you earlier on in my trip. I would have certainly done business with you, but now I'm on my way home. All I have is money to get home. I used up all my money. So the guy says to him, just let me show you what I have. He says, okay, you could show me. He takes a look at what he shows him, and he mamish goes out of his mind. It's something, a wilde metzion, beyond conception. It's mamish unbelievable. So he decides, listen, he'll buy it, and he'll make his way home like all other people make their way home who don't have anything. He won't go first class, he won't go to the best inns, he won't go to the best hotels, he'll mitch as a chup till he'll get home, but be nished, in the end, he'll have something to show for it, he'll have this unbelievable treasure. And this is what he does, and he finds himself among the lowliest and the poorest, and finally, and every time when he gets a little bit down and he gets depressed and he gets chalisha sadas, he opens up this unbelievable treasure, and he gives a look at it, and it just infuses him with such chizik. He gives a look, I just have a little more of this bitching zech to go, but look what I have for it. Look at this magnificent treasure that I'm taking home with me, and something that I now own. So he said that this is what it's Vayar Menucha. We go through, it's taka true, they're holding out instant gratification, all kinds of fabulous things for us. But what do we have when it's that? In the meantime, it's Vayet Shichmol Isbo. It's okay, so long as we know that we have this Menucha, we have the Menucha, which is the treasure that we have, this wonderful, this Menuchas HaNefesh, this Sipuk HaNefesh that we have, so long as we have this Sipuk HaNefesh where we know that we've attached our lives to something meaningful, yes, it's postponed gratification, yes, it's Mesiras Nefesh, yes, it's hard work, yes, it takes so much doing, but sof kol sof, every time we get a little bit chalisha sadas, we have to look at the fact that we have bought into something that's meaningful. We have bought into something that after the few short fleeting years that we spend in this world, the 120 years that we wish each other at Meyav Esrim Shana that we spend here, to give a look that we have something to show for our life. We have this wonderful treasure, not only for afterwards, for Olam HaBa, but while we're here. While we're here, we give a look, this Leib Matap is Aver, it has toichen, it has meaning, it has everybody around us, it's Ashreinu Matok Chalkeinu, give a look at our Oitzris, give a look at what we've accomplished, give a look at Kinhara Kehillas like this. And this doesn't come as a result of instant gratification. This comes only as a result of being willing to postpone gratification, as being willing to put in the amelus. Hey, ma amelim, vano amelim. We say at the end of Masechtas, everybody works hard. You give a look at the world out there, those people don't have it. It's not like we're looking constantly for all the indulgence that there is in the world. I keep looking for happy people. Maybe you have been also. I look around, there's so much plenty, so Kemelish Vashtedver, and there's so much to be had. People live in affluence like never before. Where are the happy faces? Where are the happy people? There's never been a generation that's been lonelier, a generation where you have this, what is it called, not the extended family, the nuclear family. It's Gornish mit Gornish. Nobody has anybody they can count on. Nobody has anybody they can rely on. Everybody feels so desperately alone. People are into drugs and into all the abuses and the addictions more than ever before. Where are these glicklicha people? Where are they? There is no glick in all of that. It's instant gratification. Momentarily it gives some pleasure, but ultimately there's no substitute. There's no substitute for working in the vineyard of the Rabbeinu Shalom. There's no substitute for wearing that crown. There's no substitute for the nachas, that sof kol sof, we have when we attach ourselves to something meaningful and something lasting, not something that's here today and gone tomorrow. And that's what the world out there offers us. It's a future shock society. As one person has labeled it, what people believe in today, they don't believe in tomorrow. And tomorrow everything changes, all the values change. What they believe in tomorrow, they'll change again the next day. And Baruch Hashem, again, Ashreinu Matav Chalkeinu, what we subscribe to, what we attach our lives to, has been here, is here, and will be here. It's the clock, it's the total face of the clock, the past, the present, and the future. So now let's go on to some of the practicalities of the situation. What are some of the struggles that we have in all of this? Some of the struggles that we come up against are the problem of juggling and balancing our priorities. And here all of us, we all agree that this is the meaningful life, the crown that we want to wear, and so forth. Now the question is, how do we juggle things in our lives so that we can achieve the balance that's requisite? And what are some of the struggles? Some of the struggles that we have, all of us, are we want to do everything. We want to do everything the Rabbani Shalom wants us to do. So on one hand, we have our families. We have our husbands. We have our children. We have our parents. We have our extended family. On the other hand, there's the community. There's community work. There's chesed. There are organizations. There is so much good that needs to be done out there. There are schools. There are so many things that need our best efforts. How do we manage to do everything, and where do we go first? But how do we make those decisions? And those are really tremendously difficult decisions, and I don't want to minimize any of them. On one hand, I have to tell you that we once asked the Rosh Yeshiva, and a group of women asked the Rosh Yeshiva, now, if it comes between my doing something outside of my home, where somebody needs an act of chesed, but it's going to intrude on my family, what do I do? So this, the Rosh Yeshiva said, my family, this woman said, my family will really resent my putting my efforts in this direction, and this will be an intrusion on them. Now, what do I do? So the Rosh Yeshiva gave one perspective, and what this perspective was, he said, you know, sometimes, he said, there's no question that our finest and best effort has to go first and foremost. Charity begins at home. Tzedakah starts with immediately at home. First our children, our husband, our children, our parents. There's no question that that has to come first. He said sometimes when we get so involved with things outside of the home that we feel that we kind of begin to think that we have to sacrifice everything in the world for whatever that act of chesed is. We have to abandon the house, we have to abandon children, or not even, let's not say abandon. Let's say we have to minimize our efforts at home in order to be able to attend to what's out there. He said, if you get too carried away by that, he said it's a chesaron in betachem. He said, because the Rabbani Shalom, after all, habei shlichim lamakom. The Rabbani Shalom has a lot of shlichim to do things. You don't have to feel that you're absolutely the only one who can do what needs to be done. If it's not you, one thing you know for sure you have to do, and that's to attend to your immediate responsibilities, which is your immediate family. That you cannot sacrifice on. Above and beyond that, whatever koiches you have, whatever energy you have, of course, you need to do acts of chesed, you need to belong to organizations. But for you to think that if you're not going to do it, it isn't going to get done, then it's a chesaron in betachem. He says, you have to know Rabbani Shalom has other shlichim. So first and foremost, attend to your first priority. That's one aspect. On the other hand, there is the basic fact that when we give, and we say this in the davening all the time, anybody who sees to it, the tzarchei tzibur, Hashem gives them his memale, the mishalos libam, and gives them everything that they need, and refuas and yeshuas, and so forth and so on. So there's no question that if we address ourselves to the needs of others, that there's a special siyata d'shmaya that really comes our way above and beyond the natural and the ordinary. So there's no question. So here, so how do we balance this out? On one hand, we know it's our families. On the other hand, there's a siyata d'shmaya. And I think here the basic ingredient in making a decision has to be, it's we have to be honest with ourselves. We have to be, Adam yira leinayim, Shmuel HaNavi said, v'Hashem yira lalevav. If what we're looking at is an honest attempt to do the best that we can, and honestly speaking, I want to attend to my first priority first, but I also want to do all the other things that are necessary. And I have no ulterior motives. When I go out there to do my chesed work, it's not because I want the kovod. It's not because I'm abandoning the house so that somebody will give me a pat on the back. It's because it's really, I
see it as a necessity, and I know that I can do it. I feel that I can do it. The Rabban Shalom knows that my motives are absolutely pure. If my motives are pure, then the Rabban Shalom will send me that siyata d'shmaya. Now, it's also true that all of us, it's important, we're told also, echad hamarba ve'echad hamamit uvilvat sheyichaven libo la'avinu shebashamayim. The important thing, somebody does more, somebody does less. The important thing is what's going on inside of us. How honest are we about what it is that we're doing? If we're using it as an excuse, if we're saying, oh no, I can't help you in what you're doing, I'm so busy with this and with that, and it's an excuse, the Rabbeinu Shalom knows. Now, we're not in a position, the point is, we're not in a position to judge anybody else, to look at somebody else and to say, how come they can't manage that? Give a look at this one, she's juggling a million and one things that can still manage to be there and to help out and so forth and so on, and this person has so much less and they can't manage it. It's not our job, it's only the Rabbeinu Shalom who yira lalevav. Only Rabbeinu Shalom sees what's going on in somebody's heart and in somebody's circumstances and somebody's home and somebody's situation. It's not our job to judge anybody else. We have to be honest with ourselves. Kamo shepatzofeyam shonos, ken deyoseyam shonos, ken moseyam shonos. Everybody is capable of different things. You and I are totally different. There are some things that happen to me that would completely undo you. There are some things, and you handle it beautifully. I handle it beautifully. Some things that would undo me, and you would handle it beautifully. We just have different, every person has different koichos hanefesh. Each and every one of us are unique and can do certain things and cannot do other things. And we should not be the ones who set ourselves up as judges for anybody else. The only ones we have to try to do the best we can and try to judge is ourselves and try to be totally honest with ourselves. But as far as what somebody else is capable of, leave that to the other person and the Rabbeinu Shalom. Not in the attempt to decide this. And oftentimes it's very hard, Karov Adam Liatmo, it's very hard to be objective with ourselves. Sometimes we need a good friend. We need somebody who we can go to, whether it's a Rav, whether it's a Mashpia, it's a Rebbetzin, whether it's somebody that we trust whose values are the same as ours. We have to go and sit down with them and say to them, this is my situation, lay it out on the table. Now tell me, am I rationalizing? Am I making up excuses? Or am I seeing things straight? Help me decide a direction for my life. And not only a direction, this is something that has to be done continuously. And this is very important. My husband always exhorts our chevra and people he has occasion to speak to. He says, you know, when you get to a certain place in life, like you get to age 40, 50, doctors tell you have to come in for an annual physical. Because you don't know you're 40 years old. You have to grease and oil the body a little bit, you know, and get some, see what's necessary to give whatever is missing, you know, to... he says, and this is true of the body. We want to make sure that we keep functioning to the best of our ability. So we go for an annual physical. The physical part of ourselves is only the tuffle. It's only the peripheral part of ourselves. He says, certainly if we go for an annual physical... We shouldn't wait till age 40, but we should certainly go for an annual spiritual. We should go to somebody for an annual spiritual. We should go to somebody we trust and say, you know, let me share with you what my life looks like at the moment. This is what I'm doing. I'm teaching so many hours. I'm at home. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Now, it seems to me maybe I can incorporate a little bit of this. Maybe I can incorporate. These are the conflicts I have in this area. These are my shalom bias situations. This is the situation with my children, so forth. Help me figure out a plan. And this is something that we do one year, and the situation may change during the year, and hopefully change for the better. So next year we've got to come back. The annual spiritual is upping. It's time again for another annual spiritual. And we come in with the new circumstances, and we need to say, now this is my situation this year. Now this is how many children I have, and this is what I deal with. This is my stress level. This is how I handled situation. This is my shalom bias situation this year. This is how it's improved, or chas v'shalom. This is how it's deteriorated. What areas should I give more attention to? What should I take away from? These are the kind of things that we shouldn't leave to chance. We shouldn't leave for a baskol to come down from Shamayim and give us
Rabbanu Shalom gave us everybody all resources. Everywhere, Baruch Hashem, if we look for them, they're there. And we need to avail ourselves of those resources. And here, too, I have to interject a kind of bias of my own. Being a Rebbetzin of a community for many years and having spoken to many communities, I want to encourage all of you also that in situations, and we all know that everybody comes, sometimes situations of life that are, as they say, if we would have written the script, this is not the way we would have written it. Things come up that we didn't count on and we wouldn't have asked for. And of course, once they're here, we hopefully look at them as opportunities and so forth. But meantime, we go through stresses in our lives that oftentimes get the best of us. And sometimes we feel ourselves really in a situation where we need help. And we've disabused our entire community of this bias against looking for outside help, for a third party to come, whether it's a Rav who's capable and competent, whether it's a therapist who is somebody that's competent, that comes to us with good references, but to go and to seek help. And to seek help before too much damage is done. We have situations that come up, counseling situations, where after the people, couples fly in from everywhere, and darling, wonderful, tighter couples, each one individually. And we practically sit down and cry when they leave. Because had this couple come to us 10 years earlier, had they come to us 10 years earlier, things could have been put back into place again. But now there's so much anger and so much resentment and so much damage and so much conflict that at this point it almost takes a nace to put it back together again. And if only they had availed themselves of some intervention, of some third-party help at that point. Of course, again, you have to get somebody who's competent, somebody who's reliable. But it's very, very important to look for somebody in situations before, chas v'shalom, it gets out of hand and it's beyond reclamation. So I would urge anybody, either for themselves or for somebody they know, encourage people around you not to hesitate. Find out even the name of good people so that you can come with a reference. And encourage people to seek help. It could be mamisha, an infusion of life itself into a person's situation. Now, for all of us, we need to know that all of this, we can wear the crown. In order to be able to wear the crown, there has to be, you've all heard this term bantered around, self-esteem. It's very important for us to have a good feeling about ourselves. There's no question, but the best feeling comes as a result of doing something meaningful or doing something right with our lives. And of course, all of us are trying to do that. But above and beyond that, I was thinking about that on the plane today, coming over. Now the Torah tells us, "Derachei darchei Noam, b'kol mesivo seh shalom." The ways of the Torah are pleasant. And what that means is that there is no value within a Torah hashkafa to look for pain and suffering above and beyond that which the Ribbono Shel'olam sees fit, Rachmana Litzlan, to send our way. I mean, for somebody to have the attitude, come on, I want to suffer a little more. I want to suffer. It's not a Torah perspective. So I was thinking today, it's a little bit, I was thinking of the analogy, I fly a lot. You know, what we do takes us in a lot of different places. And even though I fly a lot, I don't like flying. I'm not comfortable in an airplane. My husband makes fun of me. I mean, as I come into the plane, I ask the pilot if he's adjusted his flaps, if he's had a good night's sleep. And my husband's so embarrassed. He says, you know, for police, he pleads with me before I leave the pilot alone today. I said, listen, it doesn't hurt to just check, make sure. I mean, you know, it just makes. And and you take this plane ride, and you find yourself sometimes, some rides are smooth, nice rides, a machaya, and I can tell you that I never miss a chance of thanking the pilot for a nice ride. I go out, I give him a few words of encouragement at the outset, but I also give him a thank you at the conclusion. Of course, first the Ribbono Shel'olam gets a thank you, but after that, his shaliach also gets a thank you. But some rides you fly, and there's some rides that are nice and smooth, and then there's some rides that are a little bumpy, a little choppy, and then there are those that are downright turbulent. turbulent. And we've been in some of those flights that mamas, you know, you begin to say vidui, and, you know, I was on one flight where I had my little one along with me. And it was when we must have hit a thunderstorm, and lightning was striking the plane, and finale was happening, and the thing was going, and she asked me, she said, is it time to say Shema, Mommy, you know? And as a matter of fact, after they finally got to, Baruch Hashem, we got to a place where it was a little bit better, so the stewardesses announced, I'm sorry, there will be no service, there will be no drinks offered on this flight because every can exploded. With the turbulence, everything, with the lightning that hit it, every can, there were these noises and these things. I mean, mamash, it was unbelievable. And one flight we had where the plane landed and then found another plane landing right coming at it, right there where in its spot. So as it landed, it took right off again. So we landed and went right up again. Anyway, so I was thinking along, you know, this is, you know, life is not much different than, so to speak, a plane ride. And when things get choppy and things get bumpy, the pilot usually gets on the TA system and he says, you know, bear with us a little bit. We're going to try to find some place there where they will find a little equilibrium. There'll be a little bit, we'll get to clear air. We'll get to smooth air. So bear with us until we get to some smooth air. And there's no question that he doesn't stay there in the turbulence and says, okay, you know, like, this is it. We're going to just, you know, be thrown around here until we either will make it or we won't make it. But he certainly does his best to try to find some space that's clear space where you can breathe and you can have a shtickle, menuchas hadas, menuchas hanefesh. And I think that in life it's that way too. We come, Baruch Hashem, there's smooth air, and we get to the bumpy air, and then you get to sometimes where there's downright turbulent air. And we have an obligation to try to find the smooth spots in our life, to try to smooth that out, to find some place where we can function better, where the stresses are alleviated. There's no mitzvah in hanging into that turbulent space. And whatever it is, in coping with the stresses, whether it's shalom bias problems, whether it's a chas v'shalom problem with children, with business, with all kinds, whatever the conflicts in life may be, whether it's our own conflicts, oftentimes we ourselves are conflicted. You know, we do terrible things to ourselves. We set ourselves up for failure. We expect too much of ourselves. Sometimes we need somebody to kind of put that in place. What are realistic expectations I should have of myself? That's a very legitimate question to ask somebody on my annual spiritual. What's really, am I asking too much of myself? And when I can't come up with what I ask of myself, I become disappointment. And I get into the state of yiyush. And Chalisha Sadaz, help me figure out what is reasonable to ask of myself. So I need the support system. I need to avail myself of resources. Of course, what we need to do constantly and always is to keep learning. All of us. And Tazveni Yom Yomai Mazveka, we need to learn. We need to listen to Shiurim. We need to listen to tapes. We need to constantly be growing. For every day that we don't grow, we move backwards. And it infuses us with the chizuk that we need. We need to avail ourselves of all of these resources. And most of all, of course, we need to daven to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam for Siyata Deshmaya. And that is the beginning, the middle, and the end. Siyata Deshmaya. In all of this, we want to tell the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I want to wear this crown, the crown that you have entrusted to me. I want to be this Ateres Bala. I want to lead this meaningful life. I want to be the best that I can be. I want to find the smooth space in my life so that I can best be an Oved Hashem. And I need your help, Rabbeinu Shel Olam. I need you to hold my hand, so to speak, and to help me through all of this. And then, hopefully, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, whatever, you know, that today they've translated into serenity prayer, but actually it comes from one of my Zaydis. I think it's the Jikiv Amaket who said that we have a Masorah that comes straight down from Moshe Rabbeinu up to our generation. The Masorah is that you never worry. Things that you can't that you can't do it. There's only two categories of things. Things you can do something about, things you can't do anything about. Things that you can do something about, you don't worry, you do something about them. Things that you can't do something about, so you can't do anything about them, so why worry? And the Serenity Prayer goes one step further and says, and give us the wisdom to know the difference between the two. And this is what we ask for from the Rebbeinu Shlomo Tocha, Nein Ladam Das, give us that Das, give us that wisdom. Give us the ability to wear that crown. And how we wear that crown, and whether we wear that crown, is entirely up to us. They tell a wonderful little anecdote. Tell the anecdote of a man, of a prisoner in shackles, in chains, who took the chains that he was shackled in and fashioned out of it and made it into a crown. And on the other hand, there was a king who wore a crown and took the crown and shaped them into shackles and into chains. And all of it depends on us. Those things which we perceive sometimes as being shackles, things that we are chained to and enslaved to, we look at our lives oftentimes and we think, oy vey, what a drudgery, what a waste. We can take all of that. Take those chains, that drudgery that we perceive as shackles, as chains, we can make of it this crown, this Ateres Bala. And Chas v'Shalom, we can take that crown that is ours, legitimately ours, that the Rebbeinu Shalom has entrusted to us, and we can, Chas v'Shalom, make chains out of it. So it's entirely in our hands. And Rebbeinu Shalom should give us all Sviyata D'Shmaya to do that which we need to do.